This week's parsha is Parshas Vayechi. We're holding by Parshas Vayechi, and it's Parshas Chazak. Chazak, Chazak, v'nis Chazek, Baruch Shechiyonu v'kimonu v'giyonu l'azman hazeh. It's the Sefer HaYoshar, the conclusion of the Sefer HaYoshar, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Maaseh Bereishis. All of the Yesodos of Yadus are really laid out with intensity in Chumash Bereishis, and it's a time for celebration. A celebration, renewal, chizuk, all of the above. But before we get to that, we go through a very difficult parasha. There's a lot of Musar in this week's parasha. And the Musar begins with the very fact that this week's parasha is called the Parasha Stuma. What does it mean, the Parasha Stuma? That there is no space separating in the Torah between the end of Vayigash and the beginning of Vayichi. The words flow one into the other. Ordinarily, you would have a blank space. You would have a space of either nine letters empty in the middle of the line, or you would have a space of nine empty letters at the end of the line, and the new parasha would begin on the beginning of the parasha. Parasha Psucha, Parasha Stuma, none of the above. We go. It flows straight. It's very hard. You have to know where the place is. If you're laying Parsha Vayechi, you have to be able to find the spot where it begins, because there is no space in between the two parshas. And why is that so? So Rashi in the beginning of the parasha tells us two perushim. Lama Parsha Zu Stuma. Why is this Parsha Stuma? The answer is Lefi, because Shekevan. Lefi Shekevan, since Sheniftar Yaakov Avinu, Nistumu Einehem V'libam Shel Yisrael Mitzaras Hashibut Sheschilu L'Shabdam. Yaakov Avinu was Nifter is when the Shibut began. The Egyptians no longer allowed the Jews to remain there. Just there was no longer freedom of religion. There was no longer freedom. It became a communist state, and they began to enslave them. And the difficulty of Yadoya Teda, You're asking a good question. Yosef was still alive. You're right. You're asking a very good question. I never thought about that. That after Yaakov Avinu died, Yosef was still alive. So why wasn't
Yosef was a socialist.
But it's his own cloud. Yosef should have allowed, there should not have been a Shibud. As long as Yosef was alive, the word Shibud means they became... They were no longer free, and you would imagine that Yosef Melech Chodesh. That's later on. That's much later on. They were there for 200. They were there for two. The Shibud. There were five different stages in the Shibud. There were five different levels of as it got worse and worse. When they first came down, it was wonderful, and then. There were different levels of Shibud, the different degrees of what was permitted, not permitted, until they tried to kill them all. The last 86 years were miserable. And even in those last 86 years, there were different levels. I don't remember all the Mamari Chazal, but there were six different levels of Dayak in the Pasuk, of different degrees of Shibud Klal Yisrael underwent. But it's interesting, yes, a good question, that the beginning of the Shibud to some degree began when Yaakov Avinu was Niftar. What exactly that means, I do not know. But your point is valid. What?
Yosef had to get special permission to take Yaakov out. He was controlled.
So even Yosef was controlled, and Yosef was unable to prevent the Jews, the family, from being servants in a way that conflicted with their Avodas Hashem. The Shibud means there is a problem. There is a restriction on religious observance. That's what the word Shibud means. And it says that once Yaakov Avinu died, restrictions already began. Really? But Yosef is alive. Yosef was the Mishnah LeMelech. You would think that Yosef should be able to get everyone exemptions. There should be some type of way that he should be able to protect him, at least as long as he is alive. And you make a good point. After Yaakov Avinu died, Yosef was still alive. It says, Beferish in the Pasuk, Yaakov died, and the brothers, they came to him, they begged him, forgive us, v'chulu v'chulu, and this and that. So Yosef was alive after Yaakov Avinu died. And you would assume that as long as he's alive, there should not be any change. They should be continued to live the lives they lived the same way Yaakov Avinu, because Yosef's there to protect him. And yet this Rashi says no, that once Yaakov Avinu was niftar, then it began, then it says, then their eyes were already closed. Yaakov Avinu, nistimu einehem, their eyes, v'libam shel Yisrael, they already had a hard time seeing things the way they should be seen, mitzoras hashibud. So there is already a tzibu why, and then Rashi, what does that mean? Shehischilu. Rashi makes it very clear, clear as day. When Yaakov died, they began. They began lishabdom. Okay, that's one point. Next, dover acher, another idea. Shebikesh legales esakets lebonav v'nistam mimenu. Yaakov Avinu wanted to reveal the time of Mashiach, the ketz hayamin. What that means exactly is very, very difficult thing to understand. It cannot mean he was going to tell them the calendar day when Mashiach will come. That is way, way too oversimplification of this principle. When is Mashiach coming? Right? Yes, when is Mashiach coming? Oh, it's a calendar date. Mark your calendar on August this, or September this, or March this, on this day, on this time, Mashiach is coming. On which year? On this year. Come on. Is that what it means? Megal the case, he's going to go tell them a calendar date, exact a place, moment, and time when Mashiach is coming? No way. That's not what it means.
You told them the year 6000, they would be happy.
No. Why not? Why wouldn't they be happy?
Because it would be 4000 years later.
So what? That's what they tell us in Yeshiva. That's what they tell someone in third grade. That's an answer they give a third grader. You're going to tell them that Mashiach is going to come in 500 years. Oh, so for me, it's not nogea. What do you mean it's not nogea? You have a whole life to live. You have a whole life to live, and you'll know when it's come. You'll know how to deal with life. Yeah, you could say these. No one knows what it really means over here. But to say, oh, he's going to tell them a calendar date, and Hashem didn't let. And the reason why Hashem didn't let was because they would be disappointed. It's not going to happen in their lifetime. I mean, this is, it is such an oversimplification, it's shocking that we're willing to accept this, even in third grade. What it means, subbing, is, Yaakov Avinu is telling the Megala of the Kates, it means a lot more. What it means, I don't know, but it means how things are going to play out. To tell them some depth, a depth of understanding of what is this all about? What's the purpose of life? What's the purpose of the sequence of events that are necessary to bring Mashiach? What Mashiach is going to accomplish? Mashiach is going to come. Oh, Mashiach will come. Let's say Mashiach comes today. Mashiach comes today. Mayor, you ready to reveal yourself? Yeah. Let's say Mashiach comes today. And now what? What's going to happen now? Could anyone here, all the problems are going to go away? All the problems are going to go away? Okay? All the problems are going to go away. What are we going to do? What does that mean? Everyone's going to come and bow down. What does that mean? What does that mean? Mashiach is going to come today. And what is he going to do? He's going to reveal the cure for cancer? And he's going to solve all the shidduch problems? Right today, by tonight, everyone who has a daughter in shidduchim or son in shidduchim is going to mazel tov. Is that the way it works? All the hospitals in the whole world are going to shut down because everyone's going to be cured. Really? Is that what it means? Is that what it means? What's going on?
We don't know,
that's right, we don't know, but should we even think like that? Alright, maybe you're right, I don't know. When it says the Megala decades, we have to appreciate that it means something much deeper, not just a calendar date. It means to explain to them the depth of what is the purpose of Mashiach. What is the sequence of events of how the whole evolution of the coming of Mashiach, the process, the goal, and how it's going to be a ribui in Kavod Shemayim. Oh, Mashiach is here. We want Mashiach now. Yeah, you teach it to children. You have to. That's the way it goes. You have to start out with very simple bite-sized ideas in order to get. But the problem is, you get older, you have to study and educate yourself and try to refresh and renew the depth of what this means. Yaakov Avinu was going to be Megala to them things, very, very deep things that would have changed their life in appreciating what's this all about. what's where we going, the whole shalsheles hadvarim of the coming of Mashiach. And Hashem said, no, I don't want you. Rather, let them figure it out on their own. Let them figure it out. The depth of what Mashiach is, it's better that they should work on it themselves. And there's a silver lining. I mean, obviously, there's a silver lining in for us on our own to come to understand what it's all about. When better than someone spoon-feeding you, someone spoon-feeds you, it's not fun. When you have to work, when you have to be nene, you have to work hard, that's pleasure. That's pleasure more so than someone just spoon-feeding you. So there's obviously a benefit, but there's also a disappointment. There's a disappointment because, you know, no one wants to work hard. Everyone wants a free lunch. So there's milus and chesroinos. The chesroinos of not being spoon-fed was a bit of a disappointment. And nistimu einehem. Okay, so there's this push-up shot. Now, add to that, I want to just add one more small nekuda before we go on, and that is, Rashi, we always like to do this, Rashi says two perushim. Whenever Rashi says two perushim, Rashi is always telling you the two sides of the same coin. They're not usually not two completely different, mutually exclusive concepts. Usually there's an integration, there's a synthesis between these two ideas. And that idea that Rashi appears to be saying something or it would appear, possibly, there's a drush, not necessarily the pshat, is what does it mean that Yaakov Inu died? What does it mean a person died? We mentioned this before in the beginning of the shir. Like that terrible thing that I told you, the person said about someone else, he died when he was 30, but was buried when he was 80. What does that mean? That he grew up, he was steiging away, growing in Yerushalayim and Torah and Ma'asim Tovim, and then he plateaued. Is that the right word? He just plateaued. He leveled off. Not even, comes a certain point in time in life where people, it's difficult. A person has the tirdas ha-parnasa, daigas, shaduchim, and parnasa, and all these things that go along with it. And sometimes people just give up. They give up on their spiritual pursuits. And they just get through the day. Let's just, you're like a firefighter. All you do the whole day is you're putting out fires. And there's no time to actually dwell upon going higher. And that's, right, you don't, exactly. That's the way it is for 99.999% of the population, the gamani b'soicham. Okay, that's the way it goes. And no matter what situation you're in, there's always something going on. Always something getting you down, getting in the way, taking up all your time, stealing your time. And unfortunately, this example of, this fellow, he died when he was 30, was buried when he was 80, is a very scary statement. People, they stop growing. And the greatest challenge in life is not to let that happen. Is no matter what situation you are in, somehow in that situation to find an opening in that situation to make from lemons lemonade, to make some type of, to use it somewhere to go higher. Yaakov Avinu, it says that he was nifter. When was he nifter? When you learn these two Rashis, the two Parishan Rashi, you seem to get a sense. Let's take a step back. There are three elements here in this Rashi. It's a parsha stuma. That's number one. Number two, Yaakov Avinu died. Number three, Yaakov Avinu did not tell them when Mashiach is coming. Okay, when did Yaakov Avinu die? So according to the first interpretation, he died at the very end, 17 years later. So when was the stima? When was it nistimu einehem v'libam shel Yisrael? It was 17 years later. Yaakov comes down to Egypt. He's there for 17 years. When he dies, that's when the parasha stuma begins. Nistimu einehem v'libam shel Yisrael. Rashi's second interpretation. Yaakov, he kovsu v'yagid l'chem eis asher yikov yachas hayam. When did that happen? We don't know what happened. Maybe it happened in year one, year two, year three. Let's make believe it happened in year three. Hine avicha choyle. Could have happened in year three. He's going to be there for 17 years. When did the story, Hine avicha choyle, he says, okay, he asu v'agidu lechem eza shayikre. When did that happen? Maybe year one, year two, maybe year 15, maybe year 16, maybe year 17. At the very end. And then he's about to tell them, no, the Shechina departed, I'm not telling you nothing. At that moment, that's when Nistamu Einayim V'Libam Shel Yisrael. So according to Rashi's two interpretations, there's a very big nafkemina as to when the moment of Nistamu Einayim V'Libam Shel Yisrael. According to Rashi's first interpretation, it happened after he died. According to Rashi's second interpretation, it happened earlier. How much earlier? I don't know. But it was earlier. He was still alive. He was still alive. He said, "Hey Osfu, v'yagidu lechem, eis ha-shayikra b'yachis ha-yamim." After the word yamim, that is when it started. That is when the problem started. After he osfu, so nafkamina. So I wanted to suggest to you, no, that is not correct. At least in a homiletic approach to this pasuk, Yaakov Avinu died when the Shechina left him. When Yaakov Avinu said he osfu v'yagid lechem b'ya'eis asher yikra b'yachis hayom, and then they all gathered and the Shechina departed, that's when he was niftar, not niftar in body. He's no longer relevant. Yaakov Avinu was the Shechina. He was the Shechina. You see this, unfortunately. You see all the time people. They go off into the sunset. You know, they're leaders. They're very powerful leaders, and then you don't hear about them. You don't hear about them, and then years later, this person passed away. Oh, wow, I remember him. He was a great person. He was a very great person. He was a leader. He was this, he was that. I haven't heard about him in the last 10 years. Where was he? I'm not chashom saying anything bad. They just weren't relevant for us, but they were doing great things wherever they were. When Yaakov Avinu, who represented Klal Yisrael, over here is telling us a mussar. There's a lot of mussar. Yaakov Avinu, he was the Shechina. And when the Shechina was nostalgic, that's what Yaakov didn't die. Yaakov Avinu lo meis. It doesn't say anywhere in this parish that Yaakov died. Rashi says Yaakov Avinu lo meis. It doesn't say that vayigva vayosef lo meis. Yaakov never died. Rashi in the beginning of the parish says kishenifter. Rashi is a very delicate words. Niftar. What does that mean exactly? He's potter, he's exempt. You're exempt, I no longer have any mitzvahs. You're exempt. It's a delicate word. What it means over here in this context, I don't know exactly. But it doesn't mean that he died. It doesn't say that Yaakov died. Does it? When Yaakov Avinu was vayigva, vayosef, nistemu einayim v'libam shel Yisrael. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say because Yaakov Avinu meis, because Yaakov never died. So why doesn't Rashi just say the words of the pasuk? Kishayigva ve'yosef Yaakov nistmu einayim v'libam shel Yisrael. He doesn't say that either. He says kishaniftar. So I want to suggest that the word in this context kishaniftar means when the Shechina left. When Yaakov Avinu, it's two sides of the same coin. When Yaakov Avinu said to his children, "Hey osfu v'agidu lechem eis ha-shayikar eschem yachres hayomim." The Shechina was resting upon him. And when they all got together and he was about to reveal these very deep things, the Shechina left. When the Shechina left, Yaakov left. Yaakov was now no longer the Merkava of Hashem Shechina. Isn't that what the Shechina left? What do you mean the Shechina left? Yaakov Avinu is the Merkava. He's the chariot of Hashem Shechina. When Yaakov left, when the Shechina left, Yaakov left. Yaakov Avinu's image is etched in the Kitzei HaKavod. Kishenifteru Yaakov Avinu, that's what it means. What does it mean, kishenifteru? It means when he was alive and he said to them, "Hey Osfu, and the Shechina left. No, you can't have this. That moment is both, Rashi, both sides of the same coin. Nistimu einehem velibam shel Yisrael, because we're not going to understand this concept, and our father Yaakov Avinu no longer has the Shechina resting upon him to reveal this concept, and therefore it's the same exact moment. And the Musar Haskel is that as long as a person's heart is beating, he should never let that Shechina leave. Because if that Shechina leaves, then he's already dead. Then it's like what I told you today, he died at 30, buried at 80. What a chaval. There's no need for that. He dies at 80, not die at 30, be buried at 80. Here, the Shechina is resting upon Yaakov Avinu, and the Shechina, Rashi is giving us two Perushim. They're two sides of the same coin. Rashi is selecting a very unique word, kishaniftar. He doesn't say kishayomus. He doesn't say vayigva vayosef. He's choosing a word which we're suggesting is that if the Shechina is not resting upon me, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? What is my relevance? What is my relevance for Klal Yisrael? Yaakov Avinu is the Merkava of Hashem's Shechina. Yaakov Avinu's image is etched into the Kisei HaKavod. If Yaakov Avinu is no longer able to say to Klal Yisrael, He also v'yagido lechem eisa sheyikra bi'achers hayamim, then it's ki'ilu in the eyes of his children, the Shechina is no longer here. Yaakov is no longer, he was niftar, and at this moment in time, the shibud began, even though his heart is beating, and he's our father, and they all come and eat every Shabbos by him, and they love him, and they talk to him, and he gives them Chanukah geld. It's just not the same. It's not the same. And the Musar Haskel is, don't ever let that happen to you. Be relevant, be important, have a purpose, like Maxwell House, good to the last drop. Okay, that's the first part. Next part.
Well, before we get to the next step, it says that just before noon, it says, Vayichal Yaakov v'tzavis etzbonov, Vayesof rago vel hamito, Vayigva, Vayosef el hamito. So it sounds like he died. No, Vayigva.
So Rashi, look at the Rashi on that pasuk. It doesn't say anywhere that he died. The word Vayomos.
And by the way, it says Vayomos too. The second sentence in this parsha, it says Vayikru Yimei Yisrael Lomos.
Good point, but Yikrivu Lomos. Yeah, you're right. Lomos. It's coming near.
But
these are not my words. Rashi says Yaakov Avinu Lomes.
Right, this is Gemara.
What does that mean? I mean, he's buried next to Leah.
I don't. The Gemara is the question. What do you mean didn't die? They embalmed him and they did this. The Gemara is the question. They did it. What do you mean didn't they? So it means something deeper. It means something much deeper. It doesn't to be taken literally. Don't take it literally. Whatever it means, it means. The Gemara is the question. What do you mean he didn't die? Of course he died. It doesn't say that word in the pasuk. It does not say vayomos. It says vayigva, vayosef.
What does vayigva mean?
He
expired.
But it does not. You're right, Rabbi Mordechai. I'm not arguing with you. The Gemara makes this point. It doesn't say the word vayomos. There's a difference.
So his thoughts, his concepts lived after him.
Okay, 100 right. I'm not disagreeing. Okay, let's jump ahead to the story of Kisikel es Yodov. We all know the story. We all know the story that Yaakov Avinu is preparing to leave this world, and he calls over Yosef and he says, "I had a nevuah that I'm supposed to have more children." Rashi explains the whole story. It says, "Amim," he was promised. Kahal Amim, and I was supposed to have more children, and it never happened. And therefore, it must have referred to your children, Ephraim and Menashe. So you know what? I'm going to give them the bracha. It's ki'ilu, they're my children. The Shechem achal alachecha. Fine. So he calls them over, and what does he do? He sets them up. Yosef sets up, he sets them up. So let me read the psukim. The exact words of the pasuk are, Vayikach Yosef eshneihem es Ephraim bimino. He put Ephraim on the right side, his right side, which is Mismol Yisrael. Right, if I'm facing you, so my right is your left. V'yes Menashe v'smoiloi, which is Mimin Yisrael. V'yigash elav. What happens? V'yishlach Yisrael es yiminoi. V'yoshes al Rosh Ephraim. V'hu atzoir. He is the younger one. V'yesmoiloi al Rosh Menashe. Sikel es yodav. Sikel means simply wise. Seichel. He did something very crafty. He did something with wisdom. Ki Menashe HaBechor. Because Menashe is the firstborn. And then he blesses Yosef. Ayom Elokim. He blesses Yosef. And he says Elokim. Now, what does it mean? Ki Menashe HaBechor. So Rashi doesn't say anything. Sikel es yodav kitargumoy achak minun. He did something very wise. Behaskel v'chochmo hiskel es yodav lekach umidas. It was done with intent. Yaakov Avinu put his right hand on Ephraim, even though it would have been simpler for him just to put it straight, to put his hand forward. Instead, he put it at an angle. He went from, because Ephraim was on the left side. Umidas ki yodei ahoyo ki Menashe, because he knew. Oh, so Rashi takes the system. Itaka Rashi does saka say. I made a mistake. Rashi does say, umidas ki yodei ahoyo ki Menashe habechor. See, Rashi does say. I take it back. He knew that Menashe is the bechor. The afal pichein. So the way Rashi learns pshat in the pasuk, Rashi is telling us pshat. Ki Menashe HaBechor. What does the pasuk mean according to Rashi? You have to add a lot of words into the pasuk lefi Rashi. Even though Menashe is the Bechor, afal pi, Rashi is basically telling us that the pshat in the pasuk demands that we add into the pasuk the words afal pi chein. Even though I know that right in front of me on my right side, on my right is Menashe, afal pi chein, I'm going to take my right hand and put it on the left side on Ephraim. So we're adding into the pasuk the word ki Menashe HaBechor afal pichein. You tried to help me out, Yosef, by positioning Menashe on my right. No thank you. No thank you. Afal pichein she Menashe HaBechor. I will still extend my right hand on an angle from the right, I will extend my right hand on an angle to the left and put my right hand on the head of Ephraim. I want Ephraim to get the right hand. Loishos yiminoi olaf. So that's how Rashi learns shat in the pasuk ki Menashe HaBechor. You have to add words. We love to do this when we learn Tanakh. Add words. Mikre kotzer. A mikre kotzer and a mikre hofuch. Two principles that we always do all the time. A mikre kotzer means add words into the text. A mikre hofuch means do not, under any condition, translate the words in order. Translate the words out of sequence. It's a puzzle. Go backwards, forwards, put words in this order in order to make sense of the pasuk. So this is an example of a mikre kotzer. It's missing words. Sikel es yodav, why? Ki es yodav, ki Menashe HaBechor, ki af al pi, she Menashe HaBechor. Doesn't matter. I know Menashe HaBechor. Nevertheless, ki af al pi, she Menashe HaBechor. Still, I want to put my right hand on Ephraim. I know what I'm doing. Okay, fine. This is the pshat. Rashi is the Rabban Shel Yisrael, and this is Kodesh Kedoshim, and you don't play with fire. This is Rashi. That being said, we go in the way of all our predecessors, with the greatest respect, want to say drush, homiletic interpretation of difficult psukim. And this is fair game. Rashi is pshat. Rashi is a difficult pshat. You can't ignore the fact that Rashi is adding a whole bunch of words. Afal pi shani yodea shehu menashe, doesn't matter. I'm still going to put my right hand on Ephraim. So I want to tell you a drush. And the drush is, I want to tell you two drushim on this. But the first drush, the first drush is to take note of the hakdama to this whole story. Vayikach, the pasuk elaborates to a degree which I think is a little bit unexpected. Vayikach Yosef eshneim es Ephraim bimino, and is on Ephraim, on Yosef's right side, which is the small Yisrael. V'yas Menashe, he puts this smoyloi. Menashe, who is Yosef's firstborn, positions him on his left side, which happens to be the Mimin Yisrael. Rashi on this pasuk Gimel says, Habo, he explains, don't make any mistake, Habo likras chaveroi, Yimino, your right hand, is kineged small chaveroi. So Rashi explains that, you know, you're facing someone, faced upon him, your right is someone else's left. So here's the idea in a nutshell. What I'm trying to say is, Yaakov Avinu was giving Yosef Musar, very powerful Musar. He was saying to him, you know, Yosef, you have just insulted your own children. And if anyone knows better not to insult a child, it should be you. You were the victim of what I did. What Yaakov did, I favored you. I gave you the kisoynes pasim. I taught you things, ki ben zikunim huloi. I taught you, I had a private chavrusashaft with you. I taught you things that I did not teach the other children. I gave over to you everything that I learned from Shem V'Yever. I favored you. You're not the Bechor. Reuven's the Bechor. You're not the oldest. You're not from the old. You're from the youngest. Favoritism. And you know what that got us? You know what that got us? That got us Mechiras Yosef. We got a lot of trouble because of this. Look what you just did. You took your children. You set them up. Who's the Bechor? Menashe is the Bechor. When you walk with, you know, these halachas, which I don't even know the halachas because it's so far removed from me, is you walk in the street with a Rebbe, where do you stand? If you're the only student, you're supposed to stand on the Rebbe's left side to show your hachna. You're not deserving to stand on the right side. There are two students, so the more distinguished student stands on the right and the less distinguished stands on the left. Where you stand makes a big difference. That's how it is. Maybe today we laugh about this, but it's not a joke. The avos, there is chashivos, there's covered in this world. Here you are, Yosef. Where are you? You're looking forward. You, Yosef, are flanked by your two children. You have a Bechor, and you have a child that's not a Bechor. Who deserves the honor of standing on your right side? Who deserves the honor? Menashe. You're flanked by your children. Let's look at you. Forget about me, Yaakov, the Zayde. Forget about me. Let's look at you. Here you are. You're coming with your two children into the room. You're coming. You're standing here. You're in the middle. I'm giving you a bracha. Who's the bracha being given to? Vayivorech es Yosef. I'm giving you the bracha, even though that's the big question. It doesn't say anywhere that he got a bracha. It says that he blessed Ephraim and Menashe. The Ma says, Vayishlach, it says, Vayivorech es Yosef, Vayoymar. I'm giving you the bracha, Yosef. I'm giving it to you. And who do you have? Who's flanking you? Who's flanking you? Your two children. Who's the more chashuv? Who's the Bechor? Menashe is the Bechor. So where does Menashe stand? On the right. Where does Ephraim stand? Who's the less chashuv? On the left. That's the way it goes. When you walk in the street with your two children, who stands on your right, Yosef? Menashe goes on the right. Because the Menashe, ki Menashe ha-Bechor. Who stands on the left? Ephraim, because Ephraim is not the Bechor. What did you just do now? You switched them? You switched? You were mevazeh. You were mevazeh. Menashe, by putting him on the left and putting Ephraim on the right? You had a very good reason to do this. Because I'm giving the bracha, because you want it to be chal from the Zaydis perspective, from the perspective of the grandfather. That's not the way you do things. You don't sacrifice your children for someone else. Your first duty as a father is to your children, to treat your children what they deserve. You don't sacrifice your children for any greater good, even for my purposes. I'm going to give brachas now. Yaakov Avinu is giving brachas. So Yaakov Avinu, there's a bechor and there's a non-bechor, and I'm going to go put my hands. It's my problem. How to figure out which hand to put where, that's my problem. Don't make things easier for me when you're sacrificing their honor. The proper position for your two children when you stand with them is for you as a father to be mechabed Menashe on the right side and to put Ephraim on the left side. That is the proper way a father deals with his children. You just committed the worst crime in the world. The worst crime in the world. You sacrifice your own children to accommodate someone else. Because now we're going for a bracha by the Zayde, by Yaakov Avinu, and Yaakov Avinu is going to want to give the more chashuv a bracha to the Bechor, and the less chashuv a bracha, the more chashuv a hand is going to go to the Bechor. So therefore, because we have to get ready for the big event of what's going to happen when we're coming to the Gadol Hadar, so you know what, right now, in my little world, I'm going to sacrifice my children. When Yaakov Avinu sikeles yodav, he was saying, "Siki Menashe habichor, what did you do? Why did you switch? Why did you switch?" We're not even talking about. I'm telling. I'm not going with Rashi now. I know Rashi. I told you, Rashi is the Gadol Hadar. Rashi, I know the Rashi has all this elaboration because Menashe from Ephraim is going to come out Yoshua ben Nun, and he's going to teach Torah to Yisrael, give him Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, Ephraim is going to be greater. Put that aside. That's not Rashi 100%. But Al Derech Drush, what's Ki Menashe Abachar? He's giving Musar. Don't ever sacrifice your children for anyone else. You as a father, it is your duty to be mechabed your children, to do to your children what is toiv v'yosher for a father. Don't worry about everything else. That's their problem. That's Hashem's problem. And to show you that what you did is wrong, I'm switching my hands. Because your children should have been positioned in the opposite order. Because I'm giving you a bracha, and when you come with your children, you come with your children with the right priorities. This is the Bechor, and this is not the Bechor. So don't try to outsmart. Don't try to sacrifice them and switch them around. Let me correct you. This is what you should have done. Okay, that is the drush.
Why did he bring them in
separately? What?
Yosef should have brought them in separately.
Okay, that's another story. You're going off on a tangent. That's another story. The bottom line over here is, okay, I am part of Mutar. I'm telling you, you're asking a good question, but that's not the point. The bottom line is, he's presenting them both together. You present them both together, you want to make it easy for Yaakov to put his right hand on what's directly in front of what's on what's directly. So the way you're going to make it easier for them is you're going to be mevazeh your own children. Because when a father walks in with his two children, it is a kavod for the bechor to stand on the right and for the younger child to stand on the left. That's the way you do it. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. When you walk in the street with a great person, when you walk and there are two people flanking him, the greater one stands on his right side and the lesser one stands on the left side. The greater one is on the right, the lesser one. That's the way you do it. Yaakov Avinu, you, Yosef, you are the father. Your two children are standing, are flanking you. The proper thing for you to do is your right and your left. Oh, but I have to give brachas, and I'm going to have my hands, I'm going to have to go here and there. That's my problem. Don't try to solve my problem at the expense of your own children. Your children come first. Okay, your children. I know someone he went many years ago, Rav Chaim Kanievsky. He's involved in Kiruv. And he brings into his house on Shabbos Mishugoyim, Looney Tunes, people on drugs, alcoholics, you name it. They're there. He brings into his house. And again, this is many, many years ago, and he got to a point that his children were getting, the children were becoming, you know, they were in elementary school. So he asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky, I don't remember if it was Rav Chaim Kanievsky, it was Rav Steinman. I think it was Rav Steinman. He asked him, you know, I bring home these people for the Shabbos suit to mechazik them, and some of them are not a good influence on my children. But not, it's not necessarily all the time a good influence that my children should see these people at my Shabbos table. But mitzad sheni, it's kiruv, and either my children are watching me, you know, do kiruv and this and that. What do I do? So Rav Steinman said to him, "Your children are more choshev. If you feel that it's a problem, that's right. Don't take any risks. Maybe yeah, a svara like this, a svara like that. You can say this way, that way. If you have a safek." If you have a suffix, then you should not be doing it. Then don't bring these people into your house. No, why? Oh, but they need kiruv. We have to save their lives. Yeah, your children also need kiruv, and your children come first. You, as a father, your children are. His words were: your children are more choshev. Yaakov Avinu, Yosef, he sacrificed his children. He was Mevaza, his Menashe. Menashe, every time Yosef would walk in the street, it was Menashe on the right, Ephraim on the left. That's how it's supposed to be. And that's how it's supposed to be here now also. Oh, you want to accommodate me? No. That's my problem. That's not your problem. And that's the lesson Yaakov Avinu taught Nasha. Sikel es yodav. He did something very clever with his hands to give Musar to his son. Ki Menashe habichar. Menashe belongs on the right side, not on the left side. And don't worry about the brachas. We'll figure that out.
Interesting though, he didn't move the boys, he moved his hands.
He was giving him Musar. It was already a done deal. I mean, I guess I have to say why, you know, it's a lot of questions, but I think dealing with what we have, this is the most. Okay, now there's another idea, but I think it's getting a little bit late, so I'm not going to tell you that. Let me just tell you one last short idea. I have two more ideas, but let me see how quick we can do this. Rashi over here says something very important. Rashi says, in this week's parasha, kovoid. It says the word kovoid. Where does it say the word kovoid? Somewhere in the parasha. Rashi goes out of his way to say, in the brachos, kovoid. Rashi says kovoid is lashon zochar. He emphasizes that. Make no mistake, the word kovoid is a masculine word. It's not a feminine. In the context of discussing the secret of the grammatical structure of the pasuk, he makes the point in saying. The word kovoid is Lashon Zohar. What does that mean? Lashon Zohar. Okay, why does Rashi end up? He's telling you. So I wanted to make a point and explain. There are two types of kovoid. this cover that you get and this cover that you give. What is in the world of machshava, a male, a zohar, is always, in the world of machshava, a giver, and an ikeva is a receiver. The zohar is the noisein, and the isha is the mekabel. Okay, this is even a universal symbol. There's the noisein and the mekabel. In the olam machshava, the zohar is the noisein, and the isha and the nekeva is the mekabel. Rashi reminds us, the word kavod is a masculine word. In grammar, in a sentence structure, you better make sure you use the word properly. It's zohar. What does it mean to say? Every, you know, you bench Rosh Chodesh, you mispalel, chayim shel oisher v'chavod. So what does that mean? A lot of money and a lot of kavod. When everyone opens up the flappish Jewish journal,
in the middle of the picture,
my picture is there. I will give you this week the Pepsi challenge. I'm in the flappish Jewish journal this week.
Yeah.
you come back and you find me. Anyone who finds me gets, kavod. Wow, so much kavod, right? You get your picture is in the flappish. It's like, mom, it's the biggest gedula in the okay, kavod. Wow, you mispalo. It was mamish niskayim this week by me when mispalo for Rosh Chodesh. Chayim shel oisher v'chayim. I must have been really having a lot of kavana, Marcus, this month. I was zoiche to the kiyum. You're not even going to find. I guarantee you won't even find. You can search the forever. You'll never even notice the little dot where I am. But I'm there. So the teeny little dot. Oisher v'chavoyt. If only I would have been mispalo a little harder. Maybe. You would be able to see me a little better, right? Yeah. Really? Is that what you're mispalel for? That you should be the recipient of kavod? Mm-hmm. That's total nonsense. Ezehu mechubad hamechabed. When you are mispalel every Rosh Chodesh for kavod, what you're being mispalel for is that you should have an opportunity to give kavod in a meaningful way. Oisher, what does oisher mean? Not to have money, to be happy. When you mispalel for kavod, you mean mispalel to have an opportunity to give a person honor and where it makes a difference. That's a very important tefillah. Oyesher v'chavod. Rashi, this week's parasha, tells you that. Rashi says, kavod is loshon zohar. A zohar is a giver, is not not a taker. If kavod would be in the feminine form, it would mean, oh, I should be a recipient of kavod. No. The word kavod is not lashon zohar. It's not lashon nekeva. It's lashon zohar. Kavod is to give, not to take. All right, we're gonna have to stop over here. Have a wonderful Shabbos.